go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30.
Welcome, everybody, to a very, very special episode of Between the Trenches. You're probably wondering, all the division previews are all wrapped up. What else could we have to talk about? Well, the NFL is always moving, and today we have a very special guest joining us, Kyle Enright. How you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks a lot for having me on your show. Football is just around the corner. I feel like a little kid on Christmas, to be honest with you. It's 1 week away. Let's just get it going, honestly. I love talking football. I'm glad to be here.
And as usual, you have your hosts, myself, Dwayne Turner, and Mitch Sanderson, my good buddy. Mitch, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, buddy. We got a big day. It's a big day in the NFL.
I'm telling you.
We've been waiting for this day for a while.
Just a week away.
Not just a week away, but today, hey, we finally found out what happened to Tom Brady.
I know. It was a surprise to some, but when you kind of read into the evidence, well, I mean, we're about to get into it, you kind of realize it was probably inevitable.
Yeah, I think Brady kind of knew what he was doing. If you followed along, he has not been cooperating with the NFL and Roger Goodell.
To say the least.
And today, the judge nullified his 4-game suspension, kind of citing overall the big thing I think got out of it that the general awareness that the NFL cited for Tom Brady doesn't make him guilty, and a lot of the procedures that the NFL went through to get the evidence and investigate the Deflategate, they maybe didn't do in as honorable a way as they should have.
What's your opinion on this, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, this morning I was checking out NFL Network. I mean, obviously this just blew up Twitter. It blew up the whole world, to be honest with you. I mean, there's helicopters circling Gillette Stadium. Tom Brady's not even there, and they're just, you know, checking it out. But Mitch is on. Said it exactly right. The NFL didn't have a base set of rules in place, so you can't just point the finger at Tom Brady and say, hey, you can't do that, now you're suspended. There wasn't a set list of rules, so I think the NFL really made a mistake. And you look at the Ray Rice situation, you look at the Adrian Peterson situation, you look at the Greg Hardy situation, you look at Tom Brady. I mean, all these things have been overruled or tempered with in some way. The NFL needs to seriously look at their director of conduct and how they handle these kind of situations, because I mean now it's beginning to be like a fun game for these players. It's like they can do something and then just get away with it right away. But it is good to see Tom Brady back. Having said all that, it's nice to see him finally be under center on Thursday night against the Steelers. That should be a great game.
You know what, Kyle, you bring up a great point with the whole Greg Hardy. I can't remember exactly who it was who tweeted it out, but they said it. I mean, this is a huge win for Brady and the NFLPA, because now there's precedent that, these players can go out and appeal a lot of these rulings that Roger Goodell lays down. And like I said, you brought up Greg Hardy. He's even trying to go out there and see if he can appeal his 4-game suspension that's already been reduced.
Yeah, just to see if he can.
Why not?
And Kyle mentioned it. The system that they have in place with the NFL is clearly not working.
No.
They've been trying to fix it for a while, but now with this suspension, basically what Brady's done is say, if you don't do a good enough job proving that I'm guilty, I'm going to go to somebody else and they'll take it away. And because Tom Brady's certainly not innocent in this. He's still,
no, without a doubt,
he still destroyed his cell phone. He still didn't cooperate. He still definitely showed some signs of guilt, but he was able to get away with it. And now, I agree with Kyle though. Hey, that Thursday night opener went from a dud to a stud. Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady. Roethlisberger, I would say in most cases the Steelers would be favored, but they're missing some players too. Yep. And now we got a great opening game.
I was saying to Mitch just before the show started that, I mean, on Thursday, we're here in Toronto. We're probably going to be able to hear the Boston fans from Gillette Stadium. Can you imagine how loud that place is going to be when Tom Brady takes the field after,
a touchback, Super Bowl banner,
and they bring him out and he comes under center? I mean, they're going to have to take 5 minutes for the standing ovation. It's like, Tom Brady fought off the NFL. He fought off Roger Goodell. I mean, it's like another fourth quarter comeback, if you will, from Tom Brady. Hey. So, I mean, it's going to, the NFL's in full swing already. We haven't even hit game one.
Yeah. I mean, this, it's funny because, I mean, this We've talked about it. This really is embarrassing for the NFL because it seems as if whatever punishment they lay down, there's a way for the players to get out. And like I said, the precedent has been set now that, you know, they can appeal these and essentially get them nullified. So I don't know where this goes from here. Like I said, Greg Hardy is looking to appeal his sentence. I don't know. I don't know what I'd be interested to hear what Roger Goodell has to say after all of this.
Yeah, and I think this could be, you know, kind of the beginning of the end possibly for Roger Goodell. This has not been a good year
not
the
at
NFL.
All.
You see the trailer for the concussion movie with Will Smith.
Good call.
It makes the NFL look like the boogeyman.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's going to come out. He's lost one of his best friends. Robert Kraft was one of the most is still one of the most influential owners in the league, and was Goodell's kind of right hand man. And they have not been happy with each other all offseason, and they haven't come to an agreement. This is, you know, basically Robert Kraft winning and still being mad at Roger Goodell. He's starting to lose some support. I think this could kind of be the beginning of the end. But for the Patriots this season, this is the beginning of maybe a good season. In our AFC East preview, you said that the Bills are going to win the division.
That's right.
And we kind of went under the operation there that Brady was going to be out at least 3 or 4 games. I said that he's going to win. I still think the Patriots, even more so, I think they're going to win the division now. What are your thoughts now that Brady's back? Are you sticking with your guns? You still think? Where'd you have him, third in the division?
No. I had them second, yeah.
Second.
And I still have them second. I think the Bills, obviously, Brady's still the best quarterback in that division, but I don't know. The Bills' defense could be one of the best, at least a top three, I want to say. That's what I said when we were talking about the AFC East, and I still think that could be something that gives the Patriots and the rest of the division some problems. And to be honest, I think the Patriots, defensively especially, they're not looking great. They lost a lot of guys, and they're going to have trouble stopping the run and even the pass because I mentioned it. Bradley Fletcher's one of the cornerbacks in New England, and I had a front row seat to watching him last season, so I know what he's capable of. So,
all right, before we move on, Kyle, I want to get your thoughts. How do you think the Patriots are going to do now they have Brady back? I made the point that Brady's had, you know, he just won his fourth Super Bowl. He was feeling good, and the NFL has been kicking dirt on him all off season, and now he's, you know, he's even more fired up to win that fifth one.
Yeah,
what are your
it.
Thoughts?
Exactly. I mean, you know, Tom Brady, I mean, really, you know, you can say what you want about the Andrew Lux and the Aaron Rodgers and even, you know, even the Peyton Mannings, really. Tom Brady is an elite quarterback. He has been for a long time. So when I look at the AFC East, I mean, it's very hard to go against the Patriots, especially with all that's just happened, all that's unfolded, Tom Brady coming in with all that fire in his belly. But when I look at the AFC East, the team that really stands out to me is the Miami Dolphins.
Mm.
I think Ryan Tannehill really had a great year last year. He showed that he can play quarterback in this league. And when you look at the Buffalo Bills with their, you know, Tyrod Taylor, you know, yeah, he's not a bad quarterback, but this is his first year being really a starting quarterback. You look at the Jets and their disaster. They have Ryan Fitzpatrick and Geno Smith. I mean, they'll be butting heads throughout the entire year. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick, is that a downgrade from Geno Smith? No, but you know, I think it's going to come down to the Patriots and the Dolphins. I mean, like it did last year, but I could really see the Dolphins making a playoff push this year.
Okay, interesting.
All right, interesting very much. So we're going to change gears, not to get too much in the AFC East. I think we've said our thoughts on those teams before, and move on to the preseason and what has been, you know, another kind of disastrous preseason where we question why are some of these guys playing in what Aaron Rodgers calls meaningless games. We lost two top, not just top players, but top fantasy players, which I think makes a bigger difference. You know, we laugh about the difference of fantasy between fantasy and real football, but the reality is now those players mean more to the fans. Kelvin Benjamin and Jordy Nelson, both ACL tears, gone for the year. Jordy Nelson said afterwards that, you know, after Aaron Rodgers basically belittled all the preseason games, calling them meaningless, Jordy Nelson had some comments. He said it's not meaningless for a lot of these players, and he's right. Ask the top 20 players in any team, they don't care about the preseason. Ask the bottom 20 players, that's their life and death.
Yeah, just to amplify what you just said there, Mitch, before camp starts, NFL rosters have about 90 players on the team.
Sometimes over 100, depending with injuries.
Exactly. And you have to cut that down to 53 by opening day. So you're talking about shaving off 37 people off that roster. You need these preseason games to be able to determine who should make it and what that that player is going to be able to do for your team. You know, point blank. I don't know how else you'd be able to determine that. I mean, yes, there are things that maybe could be done to adjust the games themselves, maybe that make the quarters shorter, maybe even take out a full game. I mean, obviously we know that the starters only play three games. That's the only one that only amount that they're interested in, and then the fourth game is kind of for the rest of the rookies and maybe those roster bubble guys. But things can be done, but at the same time, these preseason games are necessary. A necessary evil, if you'd say.
For sure. I mean, if you look at, I mean, right now HBO's got Hard Knocks on with the Houston Texans, and you look at their practices and their preseason games, I mean, you know, you obviously don't have J.J. Watt playing very much. DeAndre Hopkins is playing like 5 to 10 snaps a game. Mm-hmm. But you look at, I mean, something like Arian Foster goes down. That Alfred Blue could use that work, right? I mean, he could use, to, you know, getting used to getting 25 touches a game, because that's what's going to happen right. Without Arian Foster. And you look at some of the undrafted rookies that are on the Texans. I mean, we get a first-hand look at them in practice and in games. They need those reps. I mean, they're fighting for not only for a roster spot, but for a living. I mean, that's, you know, they get cut. They got to go out and find a job somewhere to make some money. I mean, a lot of them have families, wife, kids. So the preseason is really important. And, I mean, I know obviously Aaron Rodgers is frustrated. He lost his number one guy. And if I was a quarterback and I lost Jordy Nelson, I'd be a little upset too. But absolutely. I think if you have to look at it from, like Mitch said, the bottom 20 guys, I mean, the preseason is their regular season, really. And the fourth game is like their Super Bowl. It's really important for a lot of guys tonight playing. I mean, tonight, all the teams play. This is the last night of preseason. There's going to be a lot of players who nobody's heard of that are going to be, you know, fighting for every inch to grab a roster spot to become on that 53-man roster.
And sorry, Mitch, I just want to add just quickly to what Kyle just said there. You brought up Arian Foster. He was an undrafted mm-hmm. free agent.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a guy who needed these games to be able to prove himself and make that roster. So, sorry, I just wanted to add that.
I think one of the things to look into, need to consider, though, too, is that this fourth game, now there's a lot of players competing for spots. A lot of those players are actually competing for spots on other teams.
Yeah, exactly.
For you know, kind of the necessary evil that you know, I think would be brought into question if you did take away these games is you'd probably see the roster shrink a little bit because there are a lot of players that are kept on the roster just for the sake of the fourth preseason game because of those starters aren't going to play. Coaches need to fill out all the spots, and there are, you know, we'll watch those games tonight. Those of all those positions, there may be three or four positions that have guys competing for one spot, and the rest are essentially already cut, which is kind of sad, and it's too bad that the NFL can't find a developmental league, something that, because they cut so many players. You're absolutely right. The NFL is ruthless as a player. Your money's not guaranteed, and the sad thing is football is football, and when I say that, I mean injuries occur. It doesn't matter. You could shrink the preseason game down to one game. You're still going to get injuries. More so, you're probably going to get more injuries in the regular season. And a lot of these preseason games help guys get in game shape. We're going to see week one come around. I guarantee we're going to see three or four guys go down for the year. Week one every year, and it's because they're not totally in game shape. They didn't get enough practice time, and now they were waiting it out because they wanted to give it their all week one, and they came out, and they're not ready, and they blow their knee. You know, and then the other thing is football, and guys just get hurt sometimes if you can be healthy as a horse.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, with Jordy Nelson's injury, it was like a reverse pivot he did.
He didn't even
get
hit.
He's done it 100 times with Aaron Rodgers throwing to him. So whether that happened week two of preseason or week three of the regular season, I mean, it's something that possibly could have happened. So it's hard to blame preseason for that. I brought up the fact that Arian Foster was an undrafted free agent. I mean, look at some of the other names. You got Victor Cruz, Antonio Gates, you know, a bunch of guys.
He didn't even play football before.
Exactly. So he had to pretty much prove that he knew the sport. Obviously, it was a slow learning curve at first, but, I mean, he's a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Tony Romo's another guy who was an undrafted free agent. Like Kyle mentioned, Aaron Rodgers, he has every right to be frustrated because he is losing his number one target, but preseason is necessary.
Yeah, I think what you'd see more often than not, if the preseason was reduced to three or two games, probably three more likely, that the starters would play probably, you know, that first quarter, a couple drives in the first game, play the first half of the second game, and that third game would just become what essentially now the fourth game. That's exactly where you would make all your roster cuts. I think you get rosters to shrink. What one thing I would kind of like to see is teams do things a little bit differently and get creative, because right now everybody runs all their preseason games essentially the same way, mm-hmm. in terms of evaluation and how long you keep guys in. So you would see some creativity in how coaches would use their rosters. One coach who hasn't really used his roster particularly well in preseason, in my opinion, has been Jay Gruden, the Washington Redskins. We saw in, was it the first or second preseason game, RG3 took a hit on every dropback, including two pretty hard hits, one of them resulting in a concussion, or maybe not a concussion, or maybe a concussion, depending on who you ask in the Redskins organization.
Right.
So that's what we're moving on to next, I think, is the laughable Washington Redskins, who have had an ugly last few years under Dan Schneider, their owner, who has refused to change their name for no real particular reason, and has run his organization like a dysfunctional family, cannot get along with his management. The reports coming out that Dan Schneider wants to keep RG3, but management wants to cut him, but maybe not. It's been just a nightmare in Washington the last couple years. Since RG3 had that breakout rookie year, everything's just gone downhill, and they look to be hitting a pretty steep curve right now.
Right. Before we, because I kind of want to go through a short timeline of kind of just the events of what happened with RG3. But absolutely. Kyle, I just wanted to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you think RG3 gets cut before the season starts?
That is a good question. RG3, I don't think that they'll cut him this season. I think he'll remain on the team. But I was talking to Mitch before the show, and I really think that the Redskins, everyone is just counting them out because of what's happened.
Oh, no.
I think the Redskins could be that team that will start off with a very surprising, like, 2 wins, 3 wins. Honestly.
All right.
Just hear me out.
Okay.
Every season that they have just blundered, I mean, the 4-12s, the, 5-11s, RG3 has gone in there and made an absolute mess of the offense. But what happens? RG3 goes in there, he goes 8 for 30, throws 3 picks, gets a receiver injured, takes 50 hits, and then Kirk Cousins comes in and cleans up the mess and makes it a close game.
Right.
Kirk Cousins is named the starter now. This is his team. He doesn't have a mess to clean up, aside from the offseason junk. But that's not on the field. On the field, it's just 11 guys. They put the pants on the same way the other team does. They go out there, they play hard. Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. He's got 3 good receivers. He's got a solid running back, Alfred Morris. Got another one in Matt Jones, who we were talking before the show that, the Redskins love him.
Okay.
Their division's tough. Obviously, they got to play the Cowboys. They got to play this new Eagles team that nobody knows, really what to expect with their offensive schemes.
Yeah.
And the New York Giants, who are definitely surging. So, I mean, obviously, they have a tough schedule, but I seriously think the Redskins can come out and surprise a couple people and, win some close games. Kirk Cousins is a solid quarterback.
Okay.
You're going to start this right out of the gate. You're expecting this to happen. So their opening schedule just is the Miami Dolphins, one of the better defenses in the league. The St. Louis Rams, another one of the best defenses in the league. The New York Giants on a Thursday night. Thursday nighters are always hard.
Yep.
And then the Eagles. Those are the first 4 weeks. So what's your prediction? Where are the Redskins' record at after 4 weeks?
Honestly, I could see them being 3-1. I know. I know it's crazy. Right. You guys laugh. Right. I know.
We're going to hold you to that. Now, Kyle, you're a Cincinnati Bengals fan, so yes. we've kind of stapled out. If anything, we've got a couple resident super fans. And if something happens during the year, we might have you back on. And we're going to hold you to that. I can guarantee it. We're going to have to ask you about that later on. So moving on back to the popular opinion of the Washington Redskins.
Hey, I got to come on here and start some drama.
I love it.
Hey, you got to remember your name. That's Kyle Enright, Washington Redskins fan. Go on too much. I do think Kirk Cousins, what hasn't been said is he has bounced around. He's had a tough time in Washington, and he's now won a starting quarterback job, a week one of an NFL team. That's not easy to do. So I think he deserves
absolutely
a little congratulations, because people kind of discounted him.
Yeah.
Ever since Michigan State, he seems to have more cons than pros. But if you look at his record and his skill set, you're right. He's you know, for the situations that he's been in, Kirk Cousins has not been. He had some bad games last year, but overall, he's had some good. He's showed some flashes.
I think his issue is that is just maybe just the turnovers, like some inopportune turnovers with Kirk Cousins. Because you're right. I mean, he's had flashes where he's, you know, showed some great QB competency, but I guess the issue is that. Kyle mentioned it. He'll come into the games that RG3 is unable to finish, win those games. But then when he's named the starter, he has not a great track record as a starter. So, I mean, who knows? We'll see how it goes.
The thing that I'll just add one quick thing.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, you look at the quarterbacks around the league that are running quarterbacks, guys that, you know, like RG3 is taken after. I mean, the only one that really stands out to me that's had success is Russell Wilson.
Yep.
This is definitely, you know, it's becoming just a pocket quarterbacks league. I mean, you look at Andrew Luck, you look at Tom Brady, you look at Peyton Manning. I mean, they're not running as much as these other quarterbacks. And Kirk Cousins is a pocket quarterback. And maybe that's just what this team needs. They have DeSean Jackson, arguably the fastest receiver in the league. Yep. They have Pierre Garçon, who's a solid possession receiver. Guy. Jordan Reed, barring injury, you know, he's a top 6, 7, 8 tight end. He's got lots of talent. He's big. He's strong. He's tall. He's got good hands. I mean, it's not totally out of the realm of possibility for the Redskins to start off not too bad. I mean, they have this new identity with Kirk Cousins at quarterback.
I guess my biggest thing is that there's two sides of the ball, and the Redskins
that
defense
is true.
Does not look very
that is
good.
True.
Even their the one guy that I pointed out in our preview was Terrence Knighton coming over from Denver Broncos. Terrence Knighton has apparently put on a ton of weight. He's pushing 340 pounds, which is not a weight that you can play at in the NFL as a pass rusher. So,
no, this is a good point.
I think overall, but you know, Jay Gruden has been a pocket passer guy. Andy Dalton was his guy.
He's an offensive guy, right?
He's an offensive guy, but he's not used to having a mobile quarterback and a guy who, like RG3, who kind of wants to use his legs. He'd like his quarterback to stay in the pocket, and I think, you know, RG3 probably needs to go somewhere where a guy like Greg Roman, and who had success with Colin Kaepernick and 49ers, I think that's kind of spot where a mobile quarterback, somebody who wants a mobile quarterback, mm-hmm. who knows how to use him as a weapon, because RG3 does not like to stick around in the pocket.
No. All right, so I just want to quickly touch on a bit of a timeline here. I mean, coming back to, I guess, the popular opinion of the Redskins, like Mitch mentioned, I mean, it all started off, you know, he's coming out. People thought that there should have been a competition between him and Andrew Luck.
Absolutely.
Coming out of the draft.
A couple scouts trying to make a name for themselves probably had him ahead of Andrew Luck, which...
Crazy now to believe, but in hindsight. But, I mean, that's what the conversation was like.
He won the Heisman over Luck.
That's right. And then, you know, he was drafted by the Redskins after they made that huge draft day trade to acquire him. So he comes in, has an outstanding rookie year, one of the best rookie years you'll ever see. But then he makes the playoffs. He wins the NFC East. And we see him, I guess it was before the playoffs, where he got hurt against the Ravens. Had the knee brace on, and then that's when things started to go downhill. They were able to, you know, sneak in, win the NFC East and get into the playoffs, but it was against the Seahawks where he suffered, was it a torn ACL or a torn MCL? Something like that. And from then on, I mean, he's had problems. I mean, Shanahan was the coach at the time. He ended up having to pretty much come out and say, look, this wasn't my fault. He wanted to stay in the game. You know, that's what you want from your quarterback to hear
Griffin's
that.
Griffin's tried to be the savior in D.C. ever since he's gotten there. And he had that great rookie year he really bought into that idea that he was the savior.
Right.
And it hasn't. He's just tried to be the hero too many times, and now he's kind of going to this kind of woe is me kind of thing where, you know, he's like, oh, these are just the cards that I was dealt, and I don't know what this – I don't really want to give too much attention to this whole Instagram thing where maybe somebody who has access – one of his social media interns, which is weird that he has social media interns, liked something on Instagram that was kind of anti-Redskins. Whatever. It's all kind of odd that it's happening, and that I would like to see RG3 kind of stand up for himself a little more, do something.
Well,
he's not helping himself.
Well, the thing is that, and I guess we'll cut that short, but just to say that he's wanted to say stuff. It's the Redskins who's kind of been cutting his media availability short.
Yeah, I guess he's not in an organization that's
Yeah, I mean, they've been he's been trying to say stuff, but they don't want him to say as much as he's been saying before because they realize that, and he's kind of said it himself, that the media likes to twist his words. Mind you, he's a smart guy. He knows what he's saying when he does say it.
He does say a lot.
I'm sure he knows what kind of attention he's going to get when he says certain things, like he's the best quarterback in the league. But, yeah, I mean, it's just been a mess. I mean, you mentioned the whole Snyder thing. Just to kind of summarize this whole timeline, Snyder and Shanahan didn't get along. Obviously, Shanahan was sent out the door.
Also not getting along with Jay Gruden.
And that's the problem. I mean, the thing is that Snyder seems like he's married to RG3 right now. He does not want to.
You know, it was Snyder, not that it's fair, but Snyder was the one who pushed for the trade. He wanted Andrew Luck or Robert Griffin. That he really felt like they needed to do everything they could to get a quarterback that year, and he moved up and did that. And you know, like we've mentioned, all those players that he gave up in return, it's just been really bad.
Well, it's funny too. Yeah. I just want to mention that I don't know if you guys remember last year when Jeff Fisher, when the Redskins played the Rams, and he decided for his captains, he would throw out all the guys that were traded for RG3 as his captains.
That was great. That was a great move.
That was hilarious.
It was a good move. Absolutely.
It really is sad though, because I mean, you mentioned what the trade that they made and the desire to be able to go and get a franchise quarterback. That's not the wrong decision to make. I mean, if everything worked out, if RG3 turned out to, you know, from that rookie season on to play as he was in that, what was it, 2011 or 2012, things wouldn't look as bad as they are. I mean, if he was playing to that level same way, then nobody would be saying anything. You know, it's just that injuries have derailed him, you know,
I think we've competing to see egos. That season might have been a bit of a fluke in a sense that everybody got enough tape on him. They watched him enough, play enough, and he didn't evolve his game.
Right.
And he just became a target where they kind of knew if we pressure him from over here, he'll run over there, and then we can just get him.
Yeah.
That, because we saw that a lot in his sophomore year where he was just running into, looked like, set-up hits.
Yeah.
And he just hasn't really evolved his game. He's got that skill level and that talent level. We've seen his flashes. But he hasn't been able to keep it going. And you have to do that. You have to evolve as an NFL quarterback. Nobody who hits their ceiling as a rookie is going to be a good NFL quarterback in this
league.
Much
less a player.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, he's been benched accordingly by Shanahan, by Gruden, and now permanently, or at least for the time being, by Gruden again for Kirk Cousins, like Kyle mentioned. And, Kyle, I just want to know, like, what do you think is the future for, like, this franchise?
Yeah, you know, I think Kirk Cousins is the right call. I mean, he was a better quarterback last year, but I think, just not to defend RG3, but, you know, we see it all the time in sports. You know, it could be that he's just flat out not the same player since suffering that injury. It happens all the time in sports, right? You see guys, I mean, look at NoSean Moreno, right? He had that torn ACL. I mean, he's not even on a team anymore, and he was a top running back in Denver. And I mean, you know, sometimes you just can't recover from an injury like that. I mean, not everybody's an Adrian Peterson who can tear their ACL, come back, and put up 2,000 yards, you know. I mean, RG3, you know, he had a great rookie year. He suffered that injury, and he obviously hasn't been the same. And unfortunately, that's sort of the NFL. It's a gift and a curse. So, I mean, it's a gift for Kirk Cousins. He's been fortunate enough to win that quarterback job and have RG3 really be a train wreck over the last 2 years. And now, I mean, now it's his job to lose, and this is his team, and it'll be interesting to see how this franchise goes about this season. I mean, you know, obviously as a Cincinnati Bengals fan, I could really care less, but you know, I hope that Kirk Cousins thrives in that offense because he does deserve to be the quarterback on that team.
So, who do you think is squarely to blame for all of this? Do you think there's one person who's, you know,
Dan Snyder? I mean, you know, that's just a really poor thing that they have going on there with the Washington Redskins.
He runs the show there.
He runs the show. It's his call. I mean, you know what? And I don't even think, I mean, to be honest, when Jay Gruden was the offensive coordinator for the Bengals, I thought he was a good coordinator. I don't think he's a head coach. And, you know, when he was calling the plays for the Bengals, they weren't bad plays. I mean, he was a good offensive coordinator. I was sort of sad to see him go. Hugh Jackson's a great offensive coordinator, but I don't think Jay Gruden is a head coach. I think his brother is a head coach. But I don't think Jay Gruden is a head coach.
He might have won that job just on that name that, hey.
Exactly, right?
This is who his brother is, and this is the Redskins. They wanted to make another splash. fix a team with a big name.
I think Dan Snyder reads into things a little bit too easy as well. Like, I think he saw that the Bengals were putting up good numbers on offense and just sort of said, yeah, that's my guy. I'm going to get him right there. Boom, done. Same thing with RG3. Had a great college career. Trades, like, the future of the team just to grab him right there. I mean, you know, all these guys come out of college. They're busts all the time.
Yeah. And,
right?
And guys, you know, it's not every big deal that makes it is a bad deal. We saw also recently Julio Jones signed a big 5-year extension. He was a guy the Falcons traded a lot to the Browns to get him, and that worked out. So these, you know, these moves can work out. I think, you know, if the Colts were out of their mind and they took RG3 first and Andrew Luck fell to the Redskins, we wouldn't never be having this conversation.
Exactly. Yep.
We'd be having this conversation about the Colts probably. Yeah. So absolutely, this is not, you know, this kind of stems, you can't say it's one person's fault, but it's the leader, who's, you know, it's one person who's putting all this in place and has just not worked out. And he's one of these guys, one of these kind of owners that, you know, I call kind of the worst owners in sports, the guys that want to have too much of a say on the team. There's probably only a handful of guys in the, handful of owners in the NFL that know enough about football to actually deserve a say on their team. You know, Jerry Jones played college football. Jerry Richardson in Carolina played college ball. Outside of that, you can't make a lot of arguments other than these guys are just really big fans. And who gives the right to a fan to make all the decisions for their team? I think he should let the guys do, you know, whatever they're going to do, whether Jay Gruden is right or wrong. He should let them do it without interference because it's just not a working combination.
Right.
So we move on?
Absolutely.
All right.
I mean, this is an ongoing story. It's going to come up again, but
put the Redskins to bed right now.
Yeah, for now.
So we had some interesting, you know, one thing about the preseason is you get to see the position battles because some positions are won on the preseason. And a few teams this year had their quarterbacks jobs kind of up for grabs. Two in particular, the Texans and the Bills, where we didn't really know, you know, but we know now both those teams who their starting quarterback was, but 2 or 3 weeks ago it seemed like a coin toss. So the Bills decided to go with Tyrod Taylor as their starting quarterback over EJ Manuel and Matt Castle. And the Texans go with Brian Hoyer over Ryan Mallett.
Surprised me a bit.
Of those two guys, Kyle, who do you think is gonna have the better season? Brian Hoyer, Tyrod Taylor?
It's tough to say. I want to lean towards Tyrod Taylor just because I actually had the chance to see him play live when I saw the Bengals play the Ravens week 17 3 years ago, and he ripped the Bengals apart. I mean, it was week 17 and the game didn't mean that much, but when he came in and he was playing, like, he's a solid quarterback. And you know, I think Rex Ryan, he's had a running quarterback before with Geno Smith. And now, I mean, not to say that Geno Smith by any means had a great season because he has yet to have that good season. But Tyrod Taylor, I mean, I could see a lot of read option with LeSean McCoy back there. He's got a great receiver in Sammy Watkins. He's got a good tight end in Scott Chandler. Solid offensive line. Yeah, Percy Harvin, exactly. They have a kind of a – it's sort of like a Philadelphia Eagles kind of vibe on their offense with a lot of, you know, trick plays, maybe some read option and stuff. But having said that, Brian Hoyer is a solid quarterback with a great receiver in DeAndre Hopkins. Now, the only question mark is the running game. With no Arian Foster, can Alfred Blue give him enough support in the running game to allow him to pass? That's a good question mark. So I think Tyrod Taylor will have the better season, to be honest.
What are you doing? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I agree. I think Tyrod Taylor has the better season. I think we mentioned when we were talking about the AFC North how last year when Hoyer was with the Browns, he thrived off of the fact that he had a great offensive line and a great running game. And him setting up all those play actions was what benefited him early in the season. When they ended up losing Mac, their center, things kind of fell apart and his numbers started to decline. So I think that might be an issue. I think that the Houston Texans have a great offensive line, but maybe not that great running back like Kyle mentioned right now. And conversely, Tyrod Taylor, he's got all the weapons in the world. There's really no reason why he shouldn't be able to be successful. So, yeah, I would lean Taylor.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you. I think one thing that's maybe, you know, both teams have real good defenses too, which is going to help out those
teams. For sure.
I think both those teams could be could be playoff potential teams.
Yep.
I think you're right. Brian Hoyer's got DeAndre Hopkins, and that may be all he really needs to do as a quarterback is get the ball out there to DeAndre Hopkins. You know, fine, he's got the rookie Jalen Strong and Cecil Shorts. Their tight end game in Houston always seems to be strong. It's just something they've been very good at.
Right.
They do have a good offensive line, which is helpful. Maybe not as strong as a Joe Thomas, Alex Mack type of offensive line.
You know, so J.J. Watt in at tight end as well.
Yeah, you got J.J. Watt in the red zone. But we talked about that that Houston's line. You know, Vince Wilfork, J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, Whitney Mercilus, Jared Krick. That's a scary
defensive line.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm Andrew Luck or if I'm Marcus Mariota, in my rookie year, if I'm Marcus Mariota, I got to play that line twice.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Same with Blake Bortles. I mean,
and they don't have a good
offensive Jameis line. Winston's playing the Texans this year. So,
Oh boy,
their defense is going to keep them in games. I think you can say the same thing about the Bills. One thing I really like about Tyrod Taylor is his mobility, and he takes care of the ball. He kind of reminds me, his running style kind of reminds me of Russell Wilson, mm-hmm. where he doesn't take hits. He's a good runner, but he doesn't take hits. Mm-hmm. He knows how big he is. He's only about 6'1". He's very accurate. In his last preseason game, he was 12 of 13 in a game where he knew for the Bills, he knew that was a big game. That was a kind of a make or break game. EJ Manuel also had a really good game that time around. And Tyrod Taylor stepped up to the plate and he delivered. So I think Tyrod Taylor is going to be, you know, a better fit. Now that I've seen him play a little more and they've actually gone with him, he doesn't need to do too much. We mentioned all the weapons they have with LeSean McCoy. They've lost Fred Jackson under their own. You know, they cut Fred Jackson. That was their choice. But still a lot of really good spots. Another position or another team looking at a kind of interesting quarterback situation. They always have an interesting quarterback situation. Is the Cleveland Browns.
It's a revolving door there, isn't it?
Absolutely. I love that. We got to find
just come and stay with us for a year, see how you do, and then we'll ship you out next year. That's exactly
We've all seen that picture of the jersey with all the name bars on it.
Oh.
It's just going that goes off of the jersey. I love it. It's hilarious every year, but you're going to add Josh McCown to that
And he won't be there long, trust me.
So what do you think? Does Johnny Manziel start games this year?
Well, okay, when I said that he won't be there long, I just meant like maybe not for a good – because, look, let's face it. Josh McCown is a stopgap quarterback until they find their franchise quarterback.
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously that's been something they've been looking for forever, but whether Johnny Manziel is that or not, I think at least mentally he's on the right track. He had the elbow injury that kind of sidelined him, so he didn't really get to compete in that third game to see if he could win the job. But I could see him starting some games late in the season, especially.
Do you really think
if
he was competing? Did you watch those? I watched a couple of those Cleveland Browns games. Do you really feel that was a competition?
Honestly, it wouldn't shock me if the coaching staff wouldn't rather have him in there.
Well, absolutely. They drafted him in the first round just last year. They definitely want him to succeed. So what I saw from Johnny Manziel was a college quarterback. Still running around 15, 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage, making those weird sidearm throws. Even the one, you know, the highlight that he had, he threw a touchdown pass. To me, you know, if that was an NFL game, that was an interception or worse. Those were all the success he was had was, you know, keep in mind against third string talent. You know, from a, I think that I have a football eye that I know the difference between a good college player and a good pro football player. And he just seemed like those were college throws. He's still getting jittery when he sees a little bit of pressure. I don't know. I would love it if Johnny Manziel could succeed in the NFL because he was such an impressive, exciting player in college.
Yeah.
But I just don't see it at all.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to ask you, Kyle. I mean, what do you think that Josh McCown is that much better than Manziel?
McCown is, I mean, you know what? He's not getting sort of the credit that he kind of deserves because he got thrown into a terrible team last year on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson are good receivers, but that team was awful.
Wow.
And he was just getting massacred in those games. But when he was on the Bears and he took over for Jay Cutler, he had a solid, six games.
Absolutely.
So he's on the Browns. He has a chance to start this season up. I mean, the only thing I don't understand with the Browns is they drafted Manziel, but they don't draft offense. They keep drafting defense, And eventually, you know, you can't win games if you don't score points.
Yeah.
And I mean, Mitch said it exactly. Johnny Manziel is a college quarterback. He's not an NFL quarterback. I mean, I loved him when he was at Texas A&M. I loved watching him every single Saturday. But yeah, he's flat out just not an NFL quarterback. And with that offense, I mean, they have Andrew Hawkins and Miles Austin and Brian Hartline. I mean, that's by no means a dynamic trio of receivers. I mean, their running backs are Terrence West and Isaiah Crowell.
Duke Johnson's injured now, though. Yeah. You know, you're absolutely right. They kind of...
It's just like a bad fantasy team. It's like, you know, it's just it's one of those offenses that you kind of go like, where are the points going to come from if they're not coming from the defense, right?
I think their best offensive player is Andrew Hawkins, and that's not saying good. I just think he's a...
He is a solid receiver.
He's a solid receiver. He's a kind of a 5'9". He's a guy you like watching. He's a give it everything you got kind of guy. But talent-wise, you know, they just... Even Jordan Cameron, who was a solid receiving tight end, he's out the door. He's you know, his rookie contract was up. He's gone down to Miami.
And I mean, we haven't even mentioned Josh Gordon yet. And I mean,
what a mess!
It makes me sad to see a guy with so much God-given talent. Yeah. I mean, literally missed two games 2 years ago and led the league in yards.
Yeah,
1,600 receiving yards
with those quarterbacks.
Yeah, exactly. With those quarterbacks, with Brian Hoyer and
Brandon Weeden was
Brandon Weeden throwing balls to him, and he's got 1,600 yards and like 8 touchdowns, and he just can't
get it
together. It's just sad to see that sort of stuff happen, because there's guys out there, receivers, that have their heads on straight and they just don't have the talent.
And it's tough because the way that his whole situation has been handled has been brutal. He had the year suspension where he was literally banned from the facility. And in Cleveland, where his whole support staff, that just seemed to me like the backwards way to do it. Why would you know, this guy's got if he's got drug problems, personal problems, you're forcing him to be alone. You're forcing him to deal with it on your own. That was, you know, it's a sad thing because I think his career is probably lost at this point.
Yeah.
Point because he's just gone off the deep end. Yeah. And, you know, he was a young guy with a lot of money. We hear this sad story all the time. These guys get taken advantage of.
Yeah.
They don't know how to handle it. And the NFL needs to do a better job. You know, something we haven't really mentioned is the Chris Carter situation that happened.
I was going to say, the rookie symposium.
Chris Carter on video caught telling rookies to have a fall guy, which is just ridiculous that you would, you know, preach to them anything other than don't commit crimes.
Yeah.
So
Chris Carter did go on the record and apologize for those comments and say that, you know, he was his heart was kind of in the right place, but he chose his words poorly.
And it's really bad because Chris Carter's a guy who... He had drug problems as a player. Yep. Got kicked out of Philadelphia.
Yep.
His life was, you know, a lot of people just cantered him out. He had that great comeback with Minnesota,
yep. mm-hmm.
where he mentored Randy Moss. So, you know, to hear a guy like that, who you kind of had as like the poster boy for the comeback, second chances, saying, you know, things of the NFL and people at home really don't want to hear, you know, fall guy for just going out. He was suggesting for when you go out, suggesting that every time you go out, you're liable to maybe commit some crimes.
Yeah.
Which...
That's unfortunate for sure.
Absolutely.
I just want to quickly mention, we're kind of talking about quarterback position battles and stuff like that, and we talked about Rex Ryan and, you know, Tyrod Taylor winning the job in Buffalo, and Bill Barnwell, one of the excellent writers at Grantland, he put out an article that kind of detailed some of the worst quarterbacks that coaches have had to deal with. He pretty much had a countdown of just like which coaches had to deal with the worst group of quarterbacks over his coaching career, and Rex Ryan was number one. I mean, when you think about what he's had to deal with since he entered the league with the New York Jets as a head coach.
I mean, he took the Jets to the
championship
game.
Back-to-back. Yeah. I mean, that says a lot to his coaching ability. And now he had to choose between Matt Castle, Tyrod Taylor, and EJ Manuel. I mean, can somebody get this guy a quarterback?
So here's kind of a question for you then. Do you think Tyrod Taylor I think Tyrod Taylor is probably the only guy that could do this, is the starting quarterback for Buffalo a year from now? Or do you think that regardless of how he plays, the Bills are still going to have to go for a quarterback in the offseason next year?
That's a great question. I think maybe they don't invest the first-round pick, but I could see them maybe after that drafting a quarterback next year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting now with college football starting officially today.
Yeah.
kind of which quarterbacks set themselves apart from the others in the, you know, top 25. Well,
the interesting
BCS
thing this year
stuff.
Is that there really isn't, you know, Connor Cook at Michigan State is kind of seems like the top quarterback, but no one's really too excited about him. It's not a real big quarterback year. I like Trevon Boykin. I you know, he seems like he may be a college quarterback guy, though.
Yep.
He's kind of similar to Tyrod Taylor.
Got a case
of
the Manziels.
Yeah, kind of, exactly. A similar case with Manziel. He's a very exciting player to watch, but see how his game transitions. It could be rough. You know, we saw this year a lot of teams looking for quarterbacks, and Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota were there, and the next best option was Brian Hoyer. You know, maybe Tyrod Taylor, who we didn't even wasn't even on our radar at the end of last season. Maybe there's a guy like that step up, but really we haven't. You know, chances are quarterbacks don't come easy. That's
no.
You know,
yeah. And I mean, we've seen the gap between a great, even a good quarterback to mediocre. And it makes all the difference for these NFL rosters. I mean, if you go into the playoffs with a mediocre quarterback, you know, defenses and coaches alike, they find a way to exploit that. And,
oh, yeah.
I mean.
Living proof.
Yeah.
Andy Dalton is. I was saying to my dad on the drive up to Toronto this morning, this is a make or break year. For that guy, I mean, I've been a fan of the Bengals since I was in 1998 when I was 8 years old. I've been a fan of them, and Andy Dalton got paid $115 million. He got a $10 million bonus if he makes a Super Bowl. Doesn't even have to win it; just have to make it. And he gets $10 million extra dollars. I mean, that's a lot of money for a guy who's got an 0-4 record in the playoffs. And I mean, you know, he's just, you know, he's like a reliable car, but he's not a supercar. He's a reliable car. You know, he'll get you there, but he might break down.
He'll get you to the playoffs.
Yeah.
But he's not,
oh, yeah. He'll put up an 11-5, a 10-6 season, maybe 9-7 on a bad year. But yeah, anyways, I don't want to spend too much time talking about the Bengals. But what I did want to mention was I know we were talking about preseason now. You know, this is the last night, and there's a lot of guys out there that are going to be fighting for, you know, their final roster spots. And one guy to definitely pay attention to, he is on the Bengals, is Mario Alford. Now, not a lot of people know who he is, but he ran a 4.28 40 on his pro day, just .04 off of Chris Johnson's record. And, I mean, you know, if he does get cut tonight, he'll get a lot of playing time tonight. Bengals have six receivers on their core, I mean, including Greg Little and Brandon Tate, who are not going to get a lot of time. So if he can make a name for himself in a game tonight, get a roster spot, even if he doesn't get a roster spot, some team will pick this guy up because he's running a 4.28 40. He's got great hands. And, I mean, he runs really, really solid routes. So definitely a guy to watch out for all, you know, the teams out there. They're definitely going to have an eye on Mario Alford.
Yeah, I played at West Virginia opposite Kevin White. Had a lot of success doing that. Could do a kind of a, you know, similar thing. A.J. Green, it's a little harder than you'd think to find a guy to pair with a top receiver who can be patient enough to get those yards, to get the catches that he's going to get, but also, you know, not going to make a play every time. Mario Alford, you know, I don't think the Bengals have really found that guy to really play off.
It's sort of like the Golden Tate to a Calvin Johnson kind of thing. They haven't found that yet. Yeah.
Let's move on a bit now to some of the bigger cuts that we have to mention. We touch on Fred Jackson a little bit, mentioned he's gone out of Buffalo. You know, that
kind of shocking.
Kind of shocking, but when you look at it, you know, they have a lot of running backs in Buffalo. They just drafted Carlos Williams, who's a kind of a similar fit to Fred Jackson. Fred Jackson was going to make $2.7 million this year. And, you know, with that backfield, I have a hard time thinking that he was going to touch the ball more than 10 times a game. I it's hard to pay that guy that money. The biggest news out of that, though, was that Doug Whaley, the GM, apparently did not clear that cut with ownership. Fred Jackson, I can tell you, I have a Fred Jackson jersey at home. He's a big name in Buffalo. He gets them going. I went to a game last year where he only had, I want to say, you know, he didn't have a big game. He only had 11 carries. Every carry, the crowd erupted in Freddie chants. Yeah. He's the guy that carries out the American flag out of he's the last guy out of the tunnel when they introduce the team. You know, that's a big blow. I mean, running back wise, LeSean McCoy is definitely going to be a bigger name, but
it's one of those
in
guys
Buffalo,
you thought was going to maybe retire a Bill and just, you know.
He was a guy even that he comes up to Toronto, goes on the radio around, comes up to Toronto, calls up Toronto. I hear him on the radio during the season. He's a friendly guy. He's a nice guy. He's very respectable, you know, very respected in the community. I think from a team standpoint, as a personality standpoint, big shock. When you look at it from a roster standpoint, you know, this is a ruthless league. We've touched on that before. I get where he's going. He those rumors that he might go to Seattle. He still hasn't signed there. Talks have apparently broken down. So Fred Jackson is still out there. A lot of teams that you know
get might Cleveland on the horn. They need a running back.
Yeah. There are a lot of teams.
That I was thinking, use. You know, I was thinking Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, that would be because Joseph Randle's lost that guaranteed starter job.
But McFadden, to his credit, has looked decent. I mean, running through those holes. So,
but you know, and what's the worry with McFadden is injuries. But Fred Jackson has been one guy very little injuries in his career.
Yeah,
kind of a solid guy. He's the typical guy. If you have a good offensive line, he's not going to lose yards, kind of thing.
Right.
And another big cut from Chicago Bears, Tim Jennings. Him and Peanut Tillman were kind of their staples as corners for a couple of years. Peanut Tillman's gone, too. They didn't re-sign him.
He's off to Carolina.
So, new faces, you know, that was – he was kind of the last member. Lance Briggs is out of Chicago as well. I think that, you know, that's one name that's gone off the roster, but represents kind of the changing of the guard with John Fox and his staff coming
and
in.
And Vic Fangio. I mean, they're trying to change that whole defensive identity there in Chicago. So
they're going young, that's for sure. Exactly. That's what they want to do, right? They want to build – kind of from the ground up now, and they can tell they'll be drafting defense for a while. That's the staple of Chicago football is defense, right? I mean, they got Brandon Marshall out of there. Now Alshon Jeffery is the number one. He's a lot younger than Brandon Marshall is.
Kevin White, they drafted him high.
Unfortunate injury, yeah. I mean, it's only a matter of time, I think, before Jay Cutler is, you know, out in Chicago.
And yeah, he's not glassing past his contract, that's for sure, but we'll see if he even makes it there. One guy that I am really excited about in Chicago is Kyle Fuller. Their rookie cornerback last
sensational.
Year made a bunch of plays. He's a playmaker. He really fits that Chicago Bears style. One analyst I heard talking about the Tim Jennings cut was that Tim Jennings is kind of a cover two corner. He's been a cover two his whole career. And like you mentioned, Vic Fangio coming in, that defense changes up.
Yeah.
He's not a real man coverage guy. He'll lose a. He's not got the speed to really keep up with the guys down the field. So we'll see where he ends up.
We'll see if Lovey reaches out.
Absolutely. That was kind of the obvious fit. You know, we haven't seen him go there yet. I think, no doubt, Tim Jennings is on a team this season.
Right. And then I guess another notable cut was Jarrett Boykin from the Panthers, a team that lost Kelvin Benjamin, their star rookie receiver from last season, due to a torn ACL. And we were kind of talking before the show. I mean, Jarrett Boykin, he's no star at wide receiver, but just for the depth, I mean, you would assume they would have kept him. And my guess is that he finds his way back to the Green Bay Packers very quickly, just because, I mean,
they're also a team looking for a little receiver depth
after losing Jordy. So
that to me, that cut and the injury to Kelvin Benjamin spells a franchise year for Greg Olsen.
Oh.
I think Greg Olsen is going to just solidify himself as a top three tight end this year. Because his targets are going to go not up by, 100%. He's going to be, up 300% on his targets because you have Greg Olsen and Funchess on the outside.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't even think Benjamin there to kind of be the one. I don't think Funchess is going to do much damage. He's, he's still very raw. He's a big physical guy, but.
And to Kyle's point, though, I mean, they almost have to throw him out there. They have no choice.
They almost have to. Yeah, no, absolutely. But you're right. Greg Olsen is going to get his targets up. I kind of worry about this that whole Carolina team being a little top heavy across the board. You know, Jonathan Stewart's a guy who's had injury problems, and they lost D'Angelo Williams this year and didn't replace him. So everybody's carries, everybody's touches are going to go up with Kelvin Benjamin going down. They have a bad offensive line, a bad offensive line.
Terrible.
Cam's going to get hit a lot. Jonathan Stewart's going to be relied on. I think that injury is going to affect that team really hard. Just a domino effect where now they don't have to really. You can play single man coverage on the outside against those corners and feel pretty safe about putting two on Olsen and putting two guys on Cam Newton. And
I mean, they ran into that problem last year, and it was next man up. And luckily for them, Kelvin Benjamin was an absolute stud, and their next man up was a rookie, and he had a great, great year. But now it's next man up again because Kelvin Benjamin's gone, and it's another rookie in Funchess. And you can't luck out 2 years in a row,
right?
With a receiver's going to put up 1,000 yards, grab all those. And he's also not 6'5" like Kelvin Benjamin was. So I mean, it's a tough break for Carolina, unfortunately. And it'll be kind of curious to see how Cam Newton can adapt with basically two receivers and one running back. Because, I mean, D'Angelo Williams, he wasn't great, but he, you know, he caught some passes.
He was an NFL back. He's not.
Exactly, yeah. You know.
He's going to have to rely heavily on that defense, which I think is going to be an elite defense.
Absolutely.
So I think they can take some pressure
off. You know
off.
What, though? I think for Cam, that may work kind of negatively, where they're going to be in games late. And Cam's going to have to make plays, and he's going to take hits, and they're going to lose some close games, which, you know, mentally can be tougher on a team to be frustrated. I think this is going to be a really frustrating year for the Panthers and for Panthers fans.
Okay.
To watch, because, you know, that defense is going to keep them in games, and they're going to really basically rely on Cam to win it for them on offense.
Right.
He's taken, you know, no secret, he's taken a lot more hits than anybody else since he's come into the league. So we'll kind of see where that takes him this year.
Right, absolutely.
So we got a couple other names. We kind of one thing I can kind of read into a little bit on preseason, which is nice, is how new guys are going to be used on their new teams.
Okay.
You know, we had a little glimpse at how is Jimmy Graham going to fit into Seattle? Is he going to be that inline blocking tight end that they've kind of been used to having, or is he going to split out wide? We've seen him do a bit of both, but there's quite a few guys, you know, big name players. Your guy Sam Bradford's looked real good in Philadelphia. Even the running back crew there with DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews coming in, I think DeMarco Murray's looked like a real good fit.
Don't forget about Kenyon Barner.
Kenyon Barner, yeah. Kenyon Barner has made some preseason splashes, but I don't think we should get too excited about him. He will make some.
I mean, he's going to make the roster just because of how productive, you know, he's been.
Absolutely, and as a returner, that is something to get excited about. Right. They've got a lot of good returners in Philadelphia. Darren Sproles and Josh Huff.
Yep.
Another interesting battle that's going to take place is in St. Louis with the running backs.
Yes.
I know we mentioned and I were talking before the show. I mean, you have Trey Mason, who had a pretty solid year last year. He finished out well.
As a rookie.
Yep. And then you have your new rookie, and, you know, people have been calling on the next Adrian Peterson, Todd Gurley coming in. You also have Benny Cunningham, who's, I mean, you know, not a great running back, but, I mean, with the way that the two are injured right now, he could be starting week one. So I'd be curious to see how that sort of three-headed monster works out and who sort of takes the bull by the reins there.
Yeah, it's too bad we haven't seen Todd Gurley, because he's a guy that, you know, in college was just electric. He's exciting to watch. The way he runs over people.
He probably wins the Heisman if he stays healthy.
Absolutely. One guy we have seen, a rookie guy, with Melvin Gordon with the Chargers. He's had a slow start in San Diego. You know, he had that first game where I think he had 11 yards on 6 carries or something.
It's his pass blocking that's holding him.
His pass blocking,
holding him back a lot.
They've decided to go a different route in San Diego, going with kind of running back by committee with Danny Woodhead, first round pick Melvin Gordon, and Brandon Oliver, who was an undrafted player, had some success with them last year. They're kind of likening it to back in the day where they had LaDainian Tomlinson, Michael Turner, and Darren Sproles. All three of those players had very good NFL careers, so we'll see how it goes for a different group in San Diego right now, but they're going to be used, you know, kind of in those roles. Melvin's kind of a runner first. He has struggled a lot in pass protection, and he's not a guy who caught the ball very much in college.
And the thing with him is that he likes to rely on his speed a lot, and that's something that helped him in college. Obviously, I think it was near 8 yards a clip he was running at when he was with Wisconsin.
He broke a lot of arm tackles, which doesn't happen in the NFL.
Exactly, and I think the problem is that he's always dancing before he tries to make that move and cut and take advantage of the holes that the offensive line provides him with, and that's just kind of not how it works in the NFL.
No.
You got to take what you get.
Saw Eddie Lacy do the same thing when he started off, and he seems to maybe figured it out.
Right.
There's definitely an adjustment period that needs to happen for Melvin Gordon, for his particular skills to translate. We saw Le'Veon Bell do a really good job. He's, you know, a lot of guys say he's a different back than he was in college altogether.
For sure.
So it's hard to make that jump, but we'll see as the season goes on. I think he's definitely gonna get his chances there.
Okay, so I guess kind of before we wrap up, I also want to mention Jameis Winston, because I mean it wouldn't be smart of us not to mention the number one overall pick. And we spoke about bad offensive lines in Carolina. I don't know how Jameis
is going to rookies starting on the offensive line.
I don't know how he's surviving this season, because we saw in week 2 where he rolled up on his ankle because of the pressure he was facing, and week 3 was an absolute disaster. I mean, Josh McCown, that was part of the reason why he was unsuccessful with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last season, because he didn't have a lot of time to be able to sit in the pocket and make plays. So Jameis, he's a different quarterback. I think he's very talented, but if he doesn't have the time to do anything, we're not going to see that talent come out.
And I mean, when I was watching the Bucs play against the Bengals, John Gruden made a great point that Mike Glennon behind Jameis Winston, Mike Glennon will have an NFL job as a starting quarterback in the next couple of years, because he's a solid quarterback, and it's unfortunate he just fell into that. You know, we see it all the time with a guy who comes in and, you know, plays well, and then unfortunately that team has the first pick and they get the cream of the crop quarterback talent in college, and, you know, Jameis Winston comes in, immediately wins the job just based on his college rapport, right?
And the fact that he's the number one guy. Anytime you take a guy that high, you almost need to
feel
the pressure to start him right away, or it's a bit of, it seems like a waste of a pick.
But, I mean, the thing that's working in Jameis Winston's favor is he has not one but two 6'5" receivers. I mean, he had Kelvin Benjamin at Florida State. Now he's got two Kelvin Benjamins, basically. I mean, Mike Evans is phenomenal. Yeah. Vincent Jackson still has some pop. Austin Seferian Jenkins is like 6'4", 6'5". And we saw the resurgence of Doug Martin in the last little bit. I mean,
I know we can't call him the muscle hamster
because he doesn't like that. I mean, he's playing pretty well. I mean, Charles Sims is not a bad running back either, his backup. So, I mean, their offensive pieces are there. It's just that offensive line is going to be a
question. The nice thing
mark.
About their offensive line that they can say is the weakness is that they're young. They have, you know, they're starting Ali Marpet and Donovan Smith, two guys they drafted in the second round this year. So they're going to get better.
Yeah.
So at least they have that to look forward to. That
phenomenal, you
know, they have
linebacker
a young
too.
Team, and even their, you know, their top. You look at their top players: Jameis Winston, Mike Evans, Austin Seferin Jenkins. Those are all guys that
Levante David
in the last
too
two
on
years.
Defense. Levante David's a fantastic linebacker.
So Gerald McCoy. Yep. They have pieces around them, and they have kind of have the thing. I think if Jameis has success, guys will be attracted to that. You've seen that in Indianapolis where guys want to play with the next young stud because they want to win.
Yeah.
And they want to have a chance to be a part of something special. So if he can flash things like that, he'll get help. And that team's going to get better. I don't think this year that they're going to do a whole lot of damage, but looking forward.
I could see like a 6-10 season, maybe 5-11, something like that for the Bucks, but with a lot of things to build on for the near future.
And it's going to be, they have a very interesting opener. Against the Tennessee Titans.
One versus two.
You know, kind of in
NFL
a very
knows what
similar, both teams in a similar set. So we'll, you know, they'll have a chance to win their starting game. Both quarterbacks, Mariota and Winston, will have a chance to win, a legitimate chance to win their starting opening roster game. I'd give the Bucs a bit of an edge there, but.
Who's the home team in that game? Sorry to put you on the spot there, because I would just favor the home team in that. I don't know.
I believe it's the Titans. But you know what? Either way, it'd be kind of great to see. We only got to see Mariota against Winston in college, really in that playoff game. Of course, I remember Jameis, you know, completely throwing the ball behind his head, and you know, Mariota running that Oregon offense like clockwork. So it'll be interesting to see, and especially. I mean, Mariota's got some weapons in Tennessee as well. I mean, their running game is questionable, but I mean, I've been hearing a lot of stuff from camp that Dorial Green-Beckham is an absolute beast. I mean, you know, they're kind of comparing him to a poor man's Calvin Johnson with the same build.
He's got the body,
6'6". I mean, it's just keeping that head on, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I know he had some problems at Missouri, but be interesting to see how he kind of shapes out. You know, Kendall Wright, still a solid wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Delanie Walker, you know, probably great destined for a bit of a comeback season. So it could be interesting in Tennessee.
That game's going to be played in Tampa Bay. I think it'll still be an interesting one for sure. And I, you know, that's interesting to think. I didn't even just make that connection until right now that the last, you know, real game that
Jameis
was in was against Marcus Mariota and did not go well. So that's about all the time we have here today. Absolutely. We want to remind you, though, you can follow us on Twitter at Between Trenches or like us on Facebook. And now the season's starting. If you have questions, fantasy questions, questions about the NFL, tweet us, go to us on Facebook, let us know, and we'll try and get back to you. Or maybe if you got a good question, we'll talk about it on the show. But NFL season's ramping up. We got a lot of things in the works here. This is the place to follow all your NFL news. You want some picks on the games. You want some help with your fantasy team. this is the place to go. You know where to find us.
Yeah, just give us a shout, guys. And I just want to thank Kyle again for coming in.
Hey,
Kyle,
no problem, man. Really, you can talk football it. Any day. All day.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, that has been episode 10, jam-packed show. I'm excited to get back at it again, guys. Take care.
Let me ask you a question. Who could possibly have it better than us?
Nobody!